Hello, fellow travelers, and welcome to Adventures in Security, episode 33 for July 12th, 2006. And I'm your host, Tom Olzak. This is a weekly podcast published each weekend, well, most of the time. And you can find the information covered in our episodes at blogs.ittoolbox.com/security/adventures. If you're interested in commenting on what you hear or about topics you'd like us to talk about, please send email to podcasts@adventuresinsecurity.com. This is the fourth in a 12-episode series in which we look at web application security. I'm using the OWASP Top 10 list as the basis for the series, so over the next 12 weeks, we'll look at the challenges facing organizations that are increasing their use of web technologies, the top 10 vulnerabilities typically found in those organizations, and ways to manage the resulting risk. This week's episode covers the third of the top 10 vulnerabilities, broken authentication and session management. And I guess I should update my intro. It's over the next 9 weeks or so. We'll look at the rest. And I apologize for not posting the podcast last weekend, but I visited a local salad bar, and after imbibing in what is normally a wonderful meal, about 4 hours later, I contracted what can only be described as one monumental case of food poisoning. So I was down for most of the weekend. I'm just now getting back into the saddle, so to speak, and this is the information I would have hoped to have given you last weekend. And on that note, I'm starting my vacation on Friday, this coming Friday. And so this weekend and possibly the following weekend, there will be no podcasts from me. So I will be posting to the blog site, which again is blogs.ittoolbox.com/security/adventures. So if you would like to see some of my comments about my trip, comments about my contemplations about security while away from the office, make sure that you you go up to my blog. So let's get going and jump into our topic for this week, which is broken authentication and session management. The broken authentication and session management vulnerability covers a lot of ground. In fact, it includes just about everything having to do with user authentication and the management of active sessions. At a high level, weaknesses in authentication and session management can result in the compromise of user and system administrator access. Further, session hijacking, resulting in the compromise of sensitive information, becomes more probable. So the first step in managing this vulnerability is the creation of a policy that, with supporting standards and guidelines, defines how various safeguards should be implemented to reduce risk. Some of these safeguards, according to OWASP, include password strength, password construction, password use, password change controls, password storage, protection of credentials in transit, protection of session IDs, protection of account lists, control of browser caching, and the management of application component trust relationships. Yes, I know, passwords are the weakest link in authentication, but it's frequently cost prohibitive for a web application provider to require or to roll out multi-factor authentication for access to web services or web resources. So for the purposes of this episode, I'm going to focus on passwords. The strength of user passwords is still a topic of friendly debate among security professionals. My position is that passwords should be strong enough to hinder cracking, that is, creating a large work factor, without causing even bigger potential problems because of user difficulties in remembering unintuitive password strings. The following are some suggestions for creating just strong enough user passwords. First, don't use only letters or numbers, and encourage your users to use the shifted characters on the numeric keys. Don't use repeating character sequences, for example, a sequence of A's. Don't use words from any dictionary, no matter what language. This includes inverted forms of words, for example, SERTROF or S-S-E-R-T-R-O-F instead of fortress. Don't use hacker terminology. Don't use passwords that represent personal information, for example, wife's name, child's name, pet's name, social security number. Train users not to write down their passwords and consider the following standards for password construction. 6 to 8 characters in length, mix of letters, numbers, and shifted characters, for example, pound sign, dollar sign, ampersand, and use a combination of uppercase and lowercase letters, and finally, pick a password that can be remembered. My preferred method of creating a password is to use the first letter of each word in a phrase. This is also a great way to build long, easy-to-remember passwords with a very stiff work factor. So let's use a rhyme to step through an example. The rhyme I've selected is the first two lines of Little Jack Horner, which go, Little Jack Horner sat in a corner. So the start of the password is LJHSIAC. So the first rule is we want to be able to have uppercase and lowercase. So I converted LJH to uppercase, left SIAC as lowercase. This is a good beginning, but to conform to the rest of our password construction standards, we need to add at least one number and one shifted character. So before we do this, it's important to remember that it's common to use certain shifted keys or numbers for letter replacements. For example, using a 1 for an I is a favorite. So I'm going to replace my L at the beginning of the password with a 1 instead of replacing the I with a 1. Also, using a dollar sign for S or ampersand for A are also common. So I'm going to leave the A in my password string alone, and instead of replacing the S with a dollar sign, I'm going to replace it with a percent sign. As long as I'm reasonably consistent with my replacement choices, and that is consistency in how I replace letters with shifted characters and numbers, I should have no problem remembering the password. So the resulting password is 1, uppercase J, uppercase H, percent sign, lowercase I, lowercase A, lowercase C. So this is a password with a formidable work factor. It's random. It uses uppercase, lowercase. It uses numeric. It uses shifted characters. I'm not saying that this password can't be cracked. It can. Any password, given enough time and the right tools, can be cracked. But the work factor is high enough that maybe the attacker would move on to somebody else's password. So that was password strength. Let's move on to the next safeguard, which is password use. Creating good passwords is just the start. Over time, passwords can be compromised through shoulder surfing or sharing. To mitigate the risk associated with these password compromise methods, or dictionary and brute force attacks, consider the following policy requirements. First, change all passwords every 60 to 90 days. More often, if it's a very sensitive processing environment. Lock out an account after 3 to 5 failed login attempts. And unsuccessful login, inform the user of her last login date and time. If she wasn't using the web app at that time, she'll know that her credentials are compromised. The next safeguard is password change controls. When a user is asked to change his password, applying certain constraints on how to arrive at the new password is important. The following are a list of best practice suggestions. 1. The user should provide his old password before being allowed to enter a new password. Many web application providers allow self-service password resets, and in many cases, the new password is sent to the user's email address on record with the provider. If this is the case, make sure a user authenticates prior to changing the email address in her account information. If passwords are changed by calling a help desk, the user should still provide enough information to prove his identity to the help desk personnel. Common approaches to user identity confirmation include having the caller provide a PIN or answer one or more questions that only the user might know. Keep a history of the last 4 to 6 passwords, and don't allow one of these passwords to be used again until it drops from the list. And finally, enforce a waiting period before a password can be changed again. This prevents users from rolling through a list of nonsense passwords until they arrive at the original password. Now we come to password storage. Passwords at rest or stored must be protected. Two ways to accomplish this include hashing and encryption. When a password is hashed, it's run through a hashing algorithm that creates a string of characters. This string of quick characters, known as the hash value, cannot be cracked to arrive at the original password. The reason for this is because a hash algorithm that is well written does not allow for the hash value to be reverse engineered or to be unencrypted. So this is the most secure method. Encryption is similar to hashing, except that it's possible to derive the original password from the ciphertext. Although this is better than storing passwords in plain text, it still provides attackers with a potentially exploitable vulnerability. Finally, never hard code passwords in web application source code. Now we move on to protection of credentials in transit. No matter how well you protect user credentials at rest, they'll have to make the trip to a server at some point. That trip presents another opportunity for password compromise. The first rule is to never send passwords in plain text. Many developers solve this problem by sending the hash value of the password instead. The server looks up the password hash associated with the user account and compares it to the hash value it receives from the client. If they're the same, the user is authenticated. But what happens if an attacker intercepts the hash value as it travels from the client to the authenticating server? If an attacker is able to pluck a hash value from a packet, he can retransmit it with the user ID to gain unauthorized resource access. To discourage the compromise of user credentials, consider using SSL, or Secure Socket Layer, encryption to encrypt all sensitive session traffic. In this way, an attacker can't easily locate the user ID and password hash value. It also protects other sensitive data passing between client and server. Finally, turn off client-side caching. In addition to providing access to authentication credentials, it also exposes sensitive business information to casual access. Client-side caching is covered in more detail in Part 3 of this series, which was posted about a week and a half ago. Next is protection secure of session IDs. This vulnerability is similar to protecting credentials in transit. If an attacker grabs a session ID from a packet, she can hijack the session. Session hijacking can result in unauthorized access to all resources available to the actual authenticated user. Some standards or guidelines to consider include: session IDs should be complex. Session IDs should change often during the session. Systems should never accept user-selected session IDs. And session IDs should never be included in URLs. But even with these safeguards in place, the best way to protect the session ID is to use SSL for any session over which a user gains access to critical or sensitive information assets. Finally, we arrive at protection of account lists. One way to hinder the unauthorized use of user credentials is to protect the list of authorized user accounts. By itself, this safeguard is not very effective, but as part of an overall web application security program, it helps to increase the work factor. Management of application component trust relationships completes our safeguard list, and web application components should not possess implicit trust relationships with other components. Instead, each component should require other components to authenticate before passing sensitive information. This must be part of the process or part of the safeguards that your developers build into your web applications. Once your policy, standards, and guidelines are in place, you need to validate compliance. I recommend two approaches. First, perform code reviews. You might not have the resources to manually review every line of code. If you're unable to implement automated source code security scanning software, at least perform spot checks of critical code elements. Second, perform penetration testing. Regular penetration tests help identify weaknesses in how web application components interact with users, as well as other application components. As with the other top 10 vulnerabilities, this is not a complete list. Each organization will have its own set of challenges. However, this is a good start. Next week, in about 3 weeks, we'll look at the next vulnerability on the top 10 list, which is cross-site scripting. And until then, be careful what you click.